Welcome back to another episode of The Junction. I am joined by my co-host, Chase. Nice to have you back in studio. You've been on the road
quite a bit. Flying quite a bit.
Yeah, it's one thing that we haven't been able to automate.
Yeah, status getting upgraded? did you just say you got upgraded on all your flights this past weekend?
I think it helps when you fly into really small regional airports. Mm-hmm. You get bumped a little bit higher in that stack.
Yeah. My name always shows up like number 26, 38, you know, last in line on the upgrade list.
Yeah.
I did get upgraded one time. It was really fun. It was so awesome. Everybody else got canceled or moved off of the flight. So I was the only one on the upgrade list.
Wow.
And even then, the nice flight attendant lady, she was like, yeah, it's looking pretty good. You might get upgraded. And I'm like, I'm the only one. I'm going to get upgraded, right?
She really left you hanging.
Yeah. If we could automate that, that would be awesome.
The upgrade part?
The upgrade and achieving status, you know, if we could do
that. Now all you need to do is just get the credit card and pretty much just spend more than the next 27 people on the list.
Apparently, I'm
looking at you, Scott.
Small spender. You got to spend more than you fly, apparently.
Yeah, it's one way to do it. Well, I'm excited to be back in the studio. We have a lot to talk about. I really wanted to focus today on, or at least a good portion of it, on an update around some of the stuff that we're actually building internally. So we've talked a lot about different use cases, how other companies are using AI. Early on, actually, when we first started the podcast, we focused in on what are finance professionals doing? What are marketers doing? How are salespeople leveraging these tools? And since then, we have actually built out some proof of concepts internally, being as we have a ton of really smart people that work for Venn Technology that are know how automation and different applications can, be applied to make, things that we do more efficient.
Well, we can start with like the error database is the one that I think has at least the most potential for us. So the platforms that we work with, there's all types of different error messages. Some of them are very convoluted. Some of them are heavy on syntax. Some of them have, big lofty words that if you're not an accountant or you're not a database administrator, you may not know what they mean. And so the idea behind this is to take in the platform name, like Salesforce, right, and the error message itself, and then see if we can find places in our database where this has popped up before and suggest what the solution might be. Because sometimes the error message is, hey, you need to update your SO doc. And for the layman's person, they're like, what is that?
These error messages aren't cataloged somewhere by the app publisher?
No, they're not. Maybe that's a business opportunity for somebody. But the error messages are generally like an API validating the payload on the fly prior to it committing the record to the database. And we send that message back to the source platform. And then the user, right, in theory, should be able to read the error message and be like, oh, yeah, this is what happened. Let me do something. Generally, the error message is very convoluted and doesn't even actually specify the real error. So what we're trying to do is take that error message, pipe it in, find a suggested solution to then send to that user immediately, right away, right? And not necessarily wait for them to send in a case or call us up or, text or whatever. But when they encounter that error, look at that database and then have a suggested resolution that we send out on the fly, like right as that error happens, we're piping that solution, that suggested solution straight back into their source platform. Because ultimately that client or that person is going to be like, I don't know what this means. Let me email then.
Well, is this only if you're using these systems in tandem? So if you have an integration in place, or could this be something that other, a business user could get value out of if they only work in Salesforce?
Potentially. I think for most of our use cases, right, we're getting error messages that happen asynchronously. So the user, right, is not involved in the exchange of information. Therefore, they don't see the error message right away. Potentially, if you were just operating in Salesforce, generally you're going to see an error message pop up. I think about like the Apex error emails that we get all the time. And even I am, challenged by some of those emails. I think there's potential.
I just get the contact your administrator message. And
yeah.
I know what that means. I don't necessarily like having to reach out all the time. Mm. It feels annoying, but I guess I'm trying to set the table for, someone's listening and trying to understand what the value of that is. And it, within the context of integrations, so often we talk to people, whether they're in a finance seat or marketing or sales, looking to connect two or more systems because maybe that standard connector, that standard out-of-the-box integration doesn't fulfill their unique use case. So we help build connections between those systems using the APIs. And sometimes there's this perception or idea that someone says, well, you can't just build it and go away. Like, just let my integration run. Well, the reality is these publishers are updating their APIs. Your business process might change, or there could be, edge case things, maybe an incorrect format of your data or something, right? There's something happening that requires ongoing maintenance.
Sure. Well, you think about maybe when you call up like a tech support and they're like, oh yeah, you didn't do this. And you're like, I don't, what did you just say? Right. It's kind of like an interpreter.
You don't even understand it sometimes.
I get the manager on the phone?
The AI bot is just on a loop.
Yeah. It gets escalated. Same bot, different tone.
Yeah.
I'm the manager.
Who's apparently has a sweet Southern accent.
Yeah. I feel like I can do that because I'm Texan or something. I don't know.
You get that rite of passage.
Totally.
I'll just sit over here and keep saying baggage claim.
baggage on your executive platinum gold diamond status.
Hey, don't hate me because you ain't me.
Sorry. I'm going to automate that next.
All right. So this error handling, like the biggest benefit, it's not just for us internally to be able to quickly identify, but you're suggesting that we could catch it systematically and send it or translate it or tell that, business user, here's how to go solve it before the next line of support.
Right. It's giving the solution to the problem in advance, knowing that we can't do something about it. Maybe the data's wrong, right? And the error message is very convoluted, but we do have the payload. We know what we're trying to accomplish. We could, once we understand that, the AI looks at all these other similar error messages, we could send back and say, hey, it looks like you had a comma when you were trying to put in $1,333. Intact doesn't like commas. I'm making this up, right? Remove the comma and resync it. And then it goes back and you're golden. Well, now we prevented that person from having to email us. They got to solve the problem on their own. They maybe learned something. And we've just kind of reduced the friction from the people, the process, and the technology simply by suggesting what they should do and letting them try it before they reach out to us. The big thing in case management is trying to prevent people from getting to the actual people,
Give them the content they can self-serve on or
exactly.
Whatever. Yeah, have you tried this thing? Here's our tutorial.
Generally, those are pretty annoying, right? But the idea here is that we'd actually offer up like a real potential solution that they could try prior to then sending in an email.
The use case we also haven't talked about yet is the upside for training additional support team members, right? So someone comes in and is familiarizing themselves with the many various systems that we work in, the different API languages. Do you think that that's kind of an ancillary benefit of being able to train up or get familiar with some of these errors more quickly? Because, hey, we've solved this problem or we've seen this 17 ways and this is the solution.
Oh, totally. There's probably the most opportunity in the training world as it relates to like institutional knowledge databases, if you will. I don't know if that's a thing. I just made that up. But for knowledge that is inherent to the company, we can give people access to that much faster than it would take for them to think about it for, or like onboard over the next 12 months, right? And they pick up those onesies and twosies, giving them access, you know, even to a chatbot that has direct access to all that information will speed things up very quickly. There was an article actually sometime last year, I think it was IBM, some big company, found that when they were onboarding call center agents, where AI performed the best was with the new hires, because they could quickly ask questions and get up to speed. But where they saw the least amount of effectiveness was for the veterans. I mean, they know all the ins and outs. They know all the answers. They don't need to ask the chatbot anything.
The vets are the ones that trained it.
Yeah, they trained the chatbot, right? So I think there's a cross sectional there where we've got people that are well versed in particular industries like accounting or maybe Salesforce, for instance, right? But they're not well versed in the other side. Right. And that's where we're going to be able to provide a lot of value in speeding up error handling, speeding up training internally on folks that don't have the accounting side, right? But they've got the Salesforce or they've got the CRM knowledge, but they don't have the ERP knowledge.
Sure. That's a good point.
The other half of that, yeah, will be super helpful for them.
Have we encountered any challenges as we've started to go down this path and build this out?
I think the challenges is, You have to understand all of the things that you need to put this together. So you need a database of information, right? You need the ability to interact with it. And then you need people that understand like the answers to the questions. Because it's one thing just to log a bunch of errors, for instance. It's a whole other thing to say, well, this particular error message doesn't mean anything because what it's actually referring to is this other thing. Well, that means you need somebody that knows the answer to that question. And you need to have a scenario where this has happened before. And it needs to be between, for instance, Salesforce and Intact. Anyway, it's a unique combination of that people process technology where in that one instance, somebody figured it out. And what we don't want to do is, you know, that person moves on or they forget or, you know, it's like that one, it's like the needle in the haystack. We found it. And then what happens most of the time is like, peace, you know, lost that needle. We'll go find it again and spend another 4 hours trying to figure out this problem all over again, which is what ultimately we're trying to avoid.
So just again, to set some context, we developed a AI committee internally and that's who's been working on this. So when mm-hmm. we talk about we, there's a group of, you know, folks who have raised their hand and offered their expertise in various parts of this process. So this initial idea was documented in a proposal, if you will, of here's the business case, here's the perceived benefit, here's the level of effort, our estimate of what it's going to take, here's the dependencies or the risks, and I don't know if there was a timeline component to it because these are considered kind of ancillary projects to what we do.
But yeah, it's like skunk works, you know, just iterate on it over time until we figure out how it should work. But that's the other thing that we've done with the other project is we're starting to analyze all of the transcripts, record those, right? And then from that, build out sections of the SOW of what the requirements are or should be. We're getting there. The thing that is probably the most challenging is combining not only your transcripts from maybe three different meetings, right, but also maybe 10 emails worth of correspondence and then maybe also a couple of PDFs, right? It's combining all of that information to build out what the problem statement is and what our potential solution is. We're all doing that in our heads and then writing it down on paper, right? So we're trying to replicate that with, I wouldn't say it's like extremely successful, but there's glimmer of opportunity that means we will continue to pursue it because if we can do it barely now, right? And then we give it all of the data, it'll probably do you a little bit better, right? And we just keep iterating on it. Reminds me of the intern discussion we keep having, right? Like the intern is going to get better because we're going to keep training it, giving it access to more information. And at some point it'll be good enough to do a draft of the SRW. Well, that's perfect. Now we can have that human in the loop, right, to review it, put it through some approval processes, maybe even have, you know, OpenAI kind of revise it just like we do in our, you know, in our chats, like, hey, that sounds great. What about this? But both of those are areas where we can increase the level of speed that we have without having to, you know, vastly expand our resources. So
it also, I think, provides coverage for just, you know, I mean, there's human error in that recall sometimes, especially we've talked about being back to back on calls. If you're, you know, talking to various different prospects across different systems, there's that level of checking. Because I could see one argument that says, well, if you're just going to go build it out with AI, like, what am I even
right, you
know, paying you to do, like why we're sitting on this call? But it's like, no, actually, this is protecting our conversation around, like, so that I don't forget. And I'm not suggesting that our team is, but I know that for me, when I'm applying this to maybe I'm having a call with a client around their experience, kind of like a case study testimonial, if you will, I used to just stress myself out over taking notes, like, you know, to the T. And part of it was committing it to memory. I've challenged myself in the last several calls with clients talking about their experience to not take any notes, unless it's just simply like, I don't know. There's kind of that habit of like taking your hands off the keyboard. But I find that I am so much more engaged with them versus trying to get down every like nook and cranny, every single word, because I need that quote. And now I can just continue to like pull insights and spend my time there and lean on AI, the transcript.
Yeah. It was such a, I think we've talked about this on the show, right? But we've set up the ability to basically take a meeting's transcript and now ask questions of that transcript at any point in time now, right after the meeting's over, or, you know, 3 weeks from now. And it's just flipped my mindset on being fully engaged and actively listening on the phone call rather than being like, okay, hold on, can I write that down? Hold on. Okay, now where were we? You know, like, it just makes things a whole lot more fluid for us to have natural conversations, knowing that everything that we're talking about is now in a transcript that we can ask questions of.
Yeah.
And I even find myself right before a call starts, I'll go find the transcript from the last call. And in our meeting, we don't know if we really have a name for it, right? But in our meeting notes, I think that's the name that I've named it. Right, I'll ask, hey, can you summarize the call? What were the action items from the last, from when we chatted? Just a quick, like, three
is
questions.
Is this in Slack or you're using the Venn chatbot interface?
No, this is in Salesforce.
Oh, in Salesforce.
In Salesforce.
Okay.
I'll ask these three questions. I'll go find the meeting, like we met last week, and I'll ask those three questions real quick just to give me a reminder of where we're at. I also do it when questions pop up of like, hey, Did we mention any ballpark numbers, or, you know, what was that one thing that stuck out that I can't remember what it was, right? And I'll give it context clues. It'd be like, oh yeah, this is what you're talking about. It just totally changes the way that you navigate a meeting, especially as somebody that is leading it, right? You can just fully actively engage, don't have to take notes because your notes are being taken for you, right? And then you can go back and refer to those at any point in time. Super handy.
And we've talked about how there's technology out there that exists that does this today, but it's pretty neat, I think, that we've built out on our own platform. It's not one of those subscriptions, I don't think, that we can drop, if you will, because we built it. Like, there's always that do, build, or buy debate, right? Like, you could go purchase a subscription to Gong and, you know, get some of these insights. But because we've built it, we can iterate or customize it to.
Well, I think where you're going is a lot of the gongs out there are tackling a specific problem and then going beyond that and saying, well, we can also do this, right? I think Gong was built out so you could watch call recordings. If you've got a team of people and you want to watch this call and you want to watch that call, right? We can do that. I mean, we can do that with ours. The way that we go about it, or the intent behind it, though, is to have access to that transcript that we can ask questions of.
What have been the biggest challenges in building this out? so far?
The biggest challenge that we've had with that in the early days was the context length. Every 15 minutes or every 15 minute video was bombing out because it was just too long. Now we're well past, context limitations. So we get a whole lot less errors. But I think right now, where we struggle is asking the right questions. It's real easy to just be like, summarize the call. That's cool. Right. But beyond that, what else can you do with a transcript? One of the questions that I have it ask every single call is what were some of the objections from the call? And that's super insightful. In fact, there was a call that came in today that I'm on the meeting, but I don't attend. And that popped in and it made me realize, hey, we need to get in there and do something about this because they're raising objections that we can solve for that we're not picking up on. So it was just kind of like a last second, like, oh man, like these are things.
Are you talking about from a managerial perspective? You mm-hmm. can push on that. Like you can coach
exactly.
into that. Yeah. Like it gives you insight even if you didn't attend the call.
Yeah. Well, so from seeing that, it made me wonder, like maybe we should be asking, where they're, where this sounds big brother-esque, but I think it's for the sake of, doing better as a company, right? Where they're, times when somebody didn't sound confident in what they were saying, right? And as consultants, right, we want to be the best at what we do, the expert. And if we don't sound like the expert, that's probably something we should tackle. But it does analyze tone and sentiment really well too. And I mean, there's just a whole world of things that you can gain from asking the right questions.
Absolutely. I've noticed, I pinged you about it earlier today because I haven't been getting these into my Slack, but another member of our team does, and she will share the funny ones with me. So for example, in a recent one-on-one, I don't recall who was, I think we were talking about the temperature outside, right? She was like, oh, it's cold in this place I'm at right now. I got to make sure I have a blanket. And the headline was, members of the call were distressed about the temperature in the room. And it's like, from a sentiment perspective, like this is not a sales call, but I mean, it just cracks me up when it calls out some specific things like that.
Yeah.
Or Mel expressed distress for, joining the meeting 3 minutes late, which leads to this. It did recommend, it says, this could lead to or point to a time management, like mismanagement thing, which, because I'm back to back to back and I'm starting to actually realize, I probably need to add a little buffer between my meetings. But, the transcript and the questions that it was asked called that out.
Yeah.
It's like being a potential risk. So you translate that into like a prospect call. That could be some very small thing, but insight that helps.
Oh, totally.
Make sure that you allocate enough time, for that next call to advance the sale.
I can almost envision, this is beyond Big Brother, but like different types of agents analyzing your transcript. Like it's like in those videos where the political guy is trying to get the thing and he's like, well, should I do the green tie or should I do the red tie? Right. And well, this focus group said this and this focus group, like these different agents are be like, well, if you want to appease this type of person, you need to do it. And if you want to talk about this and like, well, you didn't sound so hot on the HubSpot deal. You should refresh your, I can just envision like all these different bots being like,
comb your hair.
Mel, you need to flip your hair this way. Oh, now you need to wear this. And oh, you need to freshen up on the API documentation. Just people pinging left and right, trying to make you better at what you do.
I do think it's an interesting, so there was a connection to this. One of our team members recently shared an article about that. This is, I think of it as a hot take, right? So why great AI produces lazy humans. And it went into a couple studies. One in particular that caught my attention was around the recruiting use case. And so they equipped, people with the job title of recruiter. That's their job responsibility on the daily. And it was basically claiming that they became lazy, careless, less skilled because the AI is so good. And I feel pretty, like I'm not using it so much in my day-to-day that I've become complacent. But I was talking with a team member today about, hey, there was some concern around, well, I don't want to make sure that it's, you know, in line with what we're actually saying. Well, we're using a transcript, right? So really what we have to look out for in that context is hallucination.
Sure.
But this recruiting case study is interesting. I actually have utilized this to analyze batches of, like, here's a resume, here is a phone screen, and utilize that data against another data set to call out gaps in various applicants, almost like a one-to-one. So this, can you please compare what's the plus and minus? Let's talk about the pros and cons. And it's not that it's driving your, it shouldn't be driving the hiring decision, but I just thought it was interesting that it's essentially saying it's so good that it's making the person in the loop bad.
I can see, at least in my own day-to-day things, where that would come into play. And it would be because I got so used to how quickly I can get answers that I would wait until the last second to ask it whatever question, right, or get it whatever recommendation. And then I'd only have 30 seconds to look at it and be like, yeah, that's good. Or it's good enough, right? Sure. And then I'm on the phone call and somebody, you know, much smarter than me has been like, yeah, 2 + 2 is actually 4, not 5, you know, and they'd call out something really simple. That's where I see, I don't know if I call it laziness. I mean, it's, for me, it's probably almost time management, right? Not prioritizing my time well enough because I've got this, not an overwhelming sense, right? Like, I've over-normalized the use of AI. I think, thinking about the intern, right? It's real easy to be like, hey, intern, go, you know, build a sales deck, and only reviewing it for 30 seconds. You're probably going to have the same problem, right? Mm-hmm.
Well, it also pointed out that it made them, they didn't get better over time.
Oh.
So it's almost like you'd rather work with an AI intern that you do have to continue to coach, right? In a way, you're correct, versus it being, you're looking at it as like, this thing's almost smarter than me. It's calling out stuff that I didn't pick up on, right? Because then you start to become the, maybe the roles flipped. You start to take on the marketing intern approach. But I thought that was interesting too. So if you just continue to operate under that, like, you know what, it's done pretty good so far, really good. I'm going to keep trusting it. I'm only giving myself 30 seconds in between tasks to then review it. And now you're not, you know, we're not using that critical thinking component that I think is so important to the people out there that say, you know, we're going to lose jobs to AI. If we continue to essentially fall asleep at the wheel with this plugged into our different parts of our jobs, yeah, you could risk that.
I think the way that these things work, I don't think anybody is legitimately losing their job. If they are, it's probably because it was already on the way out. But from what I've been able to play with and truly figure out, it's not good enough to do things that take up a significant amount of, maybe I'll say brain space, right? Like if you ask it to answer 2 + 2, well, of course it's going to know the answer, right? But if you ask it to do this really complex math and prove, so in math, I know the math heads are going to be like, oh man, he doesn't know anything he's talking about. Right, but you can prove through math that this answer is true. If you try to get the large language model to prove that it should use this sentence over this sentence, and now we're like, you know, multiple tasks into the problem statement, it's going to take a long time for it to get really good at that. But if you want to ask simple, just straightforward, hey, when does the sun rise from east to west? You know, like very simple-minded tasks, it'll be very good at that. And if you've got a simple-minded job or your tasks are very simple-minded, of course, it's probably going to do that. And it does it already, you know, really well. It's where you have to pair all those tasks together to build a bigger product or a bigger service or a bigger whatever, right?
I also think it points to the, what are you doing with, how are you measuring the output, the outcome? So with anything, even if you do get a model trained up so that it's so good that it writes killer social posts or blog posts based off of what you're feeding it, are you still measuring the effectiveness of how that content is performing on the web? Or you just like, that's where I see like this whole, or in this case of the recruiters, if they're just like allowing the AI to score stuff and they're going, that's pretty good, that's good enough. And are you actually looking at the effectiveness of those hires or over time and going, okay, we've applied AI to this particular job and group of candidates over 3 months, and look at how do they perform in their first 30, 60, 90. And you're seeing a total disconnect from how you were doing it the old school manual way.
Right.
Then that's a good indicator. So even if we are kind of like allowing AI to take over some of these jobs, then the data is going to find you. It's going to catch up if you're not paying attention to
that, or whatever that normal is now exceeded by somebody that's even better. I think about that email that you forwarded me.
It was so good.
I was like,
that was a person. Yeah, they did their research.
So Mel got an email from somebody. It was a cold outreach, right? And mentioned her new title, mentioned a couple of other.
All three of my last roles, mentioned two new hires. And the two new hires,
yeah. And my first thought was, man, that would be really difficult to, like, AI. Is that can I use it as a verb? I don't know. I just did.
You AI'd it.
You AI'd.
You've tried to make this a thing in previous episodes.
AI'd it. It's going to be a thing. I'm going to be famous. I'm going to be in Webster Dictionary Word of the Year. No?
He's on record.
That'll never happen.
Is that your April Fool's joke?
Bet.
Oh, no. Stop. So your first thought was, how can I take this and replicate this as our own outreach? Like, you were sitting there analyzing it from a, was that a person or was that AI?
I was pretty certain that it was a person. I was thinking through, how could I use AI?
Correct, which is my original assumption with you.
Yeah, that's what I mean, how great is that email? It's really good. Very personable. You're likely to respond. But I go back to actually what you just mentioned, you know, how effective is that? Like, sure, it stands out to us, but does it stand out to everybody? And does that person get a high reply rate? Because if not, I mean, to build that out, I think I could do it. But if the click-through rate is 0.001%, then I just wasted a whole lot of time, right?
But I think that goes back to, sure, there are some things that you don't actually know what it's going to be till you build it. But we talk about this all the time. People, process, and technology. Take the technology out of it. Is it an effective, like, you have to use the template. Is that, has that been an effective outreach before the tool or the AI existed? Yeah. Then you can go replicate
it. Okay, that's
right.
Fair. Like, well, so did you respond?
Not yet.
Wait, are you going to?
I mean, I was trying to like do the whole when you're on PTO, be on PTO. Well, holiday. I got it on a good Friday.
Fair. All right, cool.
Which they didn't account for, but it still totally got my attention.
I wonder, do people track how long it takes to respond to emails?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I mean, you're killing his KPI right now by not responding.
Oh, no. I'll apologize for that if I take the meeting. No, I was super impressed by that. I don't know exactly where you're going with it, other than just to build that out would probably be a, you know,
I was like automated draft emails, right?
That if there's a tool, if someone's listening and you have a tool that you would recommend for that or an approach, let us know. I know there's a lot of companies out there saying that they are doing this AI.
Oh yeah. There's lots.
You know.
Like literally doing it and doing it well, like to that email, you should paste that, that copy somewhere so people can see what we're talking about.
Yeah, I will. Okay. I can do that. All right. So speaking of holidays, because we just talked about how we're off a Good Friday, April Fools. I was expecting way more AI buzz, unless it just hasn't hit yet. Like, there's just something that hasn't quite made it to our feed, but pretty lackluster.
Yeah. I'm not, I didn't see anything that stood out. 7-Eleven had a hot dog flavored drink.
All these these food and beverage companies coming out with like weird flavors.
Nah.
Like there was like what was the sriracha toothpaste?
Oh, sriracha toothpaste. Queso slush from Sonic. I don't know. I might try one of those, you know, eventually.
You do that.
You know, the one that's probably the most famous that maybe most folks won't remember is on April 1st, like a bajillion years ago, Google launched Gmail. They launched Gmail on April Fool's and everybody thought it was a joke because you couldn't get free email. There wasn't a thing. And I mean, look at where we are now, right? So
yeah.
I feel like April Fool's is probably, this is the poor marketer in me, but like one of the best days to launch something because you could get a lot of.
We did launch Chad GPT.
Oh, that's right.
On April Fool's last year.
We had some pretty big names come through too. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah. And I saw like a brand this year tried to, you know, do something like that. I'm like, you're so late to the game.
You know, it helps though when your Chad is actually pretty snarky.
He's funny.
Yeah,
we do have a real live Chad at Ben Technology who was in fact the GPT behind our technology.
We pay him $1 per million tokens.
Oh, it was good. Yeah, I don't know. I'm just kind of like not very impressed, but there are a lot of articles or headlines out there just saying to be wary that you should expect the AI scams to increase on April Fool's Day, which I just pretty much don't. You already know I kind of live under a rock on some of this stuff. Like all of Dallas-Fort Worth could be burning and someone would have to come tap me on the shoulder and say, Mel, I need you to evacuate the building. DFW is on fire.
Did you know that next week the sun will be blotted out by...
So I've heard
this giant rock.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. I think I might just like not plan to even leave work because I've heard there's like this emergency, state of emergency or travel advisory. And it's already a journey to get home.
Does that mean your timesheet's going to be 24 hours?
Yeah. So April Fool's coming into the eclipse though. Like, is there anything, as you mentioned that, is there anything that you think that we're going to see in the way of AI?
Yeah, I don't know. I think we mentioned this on the last one we recorded, but Facebook is, I'm sure it was for real for a hot minute, but it was taken over by the African child building out a monkey with plastic bottles. And then I'm sure it kind of got a little bit worse from there. And then hopefully, at least by now, people are like, okay, the kid, you know, didn't build Noah's Ark out of water bottles.
Right.
But it doesn't look too promising to know that, you know, that probably started out with like the original post, whatever it was. And then it got a ton of likes. But I'm thinking about Sora. I'm thinking about OpenAI's unreleased text to voice. That they've been talking about, and that's actually not new. Those have been around for a while. But I think the access to that, the easy access to it is going, you're going to have more of those, I'm going to say Indian call centers, right? Where the scam guys are like imitating Trump or Biden to, hey, you need to donate now, right? To get you to do things that you shouldn't have done. The other thing that I thought was interesting was, I think this was OpenAI had some recommendations that to banks that they start pulling like voice security questions, right? Where analyzing Mel's voice. Okay,
that's pretty scary.
This sounds like Mel. Okay, yeah, Mel does want me to send $10,000 to a Nigerian prince, right? But what has me more concerned is the phone calls where, you know, for instance, somebody's replicated my voice from the podcast or any of the other YouTube stars, you know, we're practically there, right? But like anybody, any other voice, they use the voice to then call, you know, somebody from their family and hopefully probably giving people ideas now, which is terrible. But those are things that we got to watch out for because you can make that voice say anything like, hey, I'm in trouble or, hey, I've got a really great idea or, hey, you really owe me a lot of money, you know? And I think we're going to run into a lot of fraud type activities where, well, if you're thinking about stocks, I'm thinking about who has fraud type tools that will be, it's like the Zoom. Zoom got really big during COVID, right? Because everybody needed to hop on the phone. I think we're on the precipice of everybody needs fraud tools.
We need to spend, I committed to this last episode and we are going to do it. We will dedicate an episode to just that. And I want to get really tactical on
security.
Yeah. I can't even follow that.
Real tools. I think
I
want to
talk about real strategies, real tools, companies that are, I know there's companies that are out there doing this. I mean, kind of going back to like everything that we're reading about April Fool's Day or like even the eclipse.
Yeah.
All the headlines right now are like, just be aware of fraud. Be aware of hallucinations. Right. Like the biggest threat that they're saying at the moment is like, don't trust. If you ask ChatGPT, why shouldn't we, like, can I look at the sun? You know, it's like going to come up with these things and it's going to tell you
10,000 people blinded.
Yeah. Permanent, you know, vision loss, and which is not true for the total period of the solar eclipse, but like ask follow-up questions is what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Look for reputable sources.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes back to the justification.
Yeah.
What was the source for this? If it's coming from some, you know, my wiki dot, you know, spammy solar eclipse dot blog.
Well,
then it's probably not the source you should bank on.
There's like a what's like the thing where it's like you always have to keep questioning. Pretty sure this is in the Bible, right? It says, keep on knocking. I think about, you just got to keep questioning or always question the validity of anything almost in these days. Over the weekend, AT&T had 70 million people's social security numbers leaked. Mine was one of them. You know, I'm sure 70 million, there's only 300 million people in America, like basically everybody. You know, like at this point,
we're all in it.
Your social security number is probably out there somewhere.
See,
right?
That's another one. I'm an AT&T customer. I didn't get that email. Didn't catch my attention.
That's right. You'll get a $3 check in about 3 years.
Perfect. Yeah. Well, okay. On that, that's where we're going to end it. We will commit to going away and doing our due diligence on preparing for that episode so that we can get a little bit more tactical about the things that you can be doing in your day to day. To kind of be aware, it kind of goes back to like all the trainings that you do around like phishing attempts and security. Mm-hmm. But like, I really do think that there's probably some, it goes back to these tools are being used, can be used for good and for bad.
Yep.
And how can we apply them? We'll definitely do that. So in the meantime, I hope everybody stays safe out there.
Don't burn your eyes.
Yeah, don't do it.
Just wait for it to come and go. And don't get stuck in traffic either.
All right, well,
keep it automated.